Welcome to the Worldview Podcast. My name is Aryan, and I guess I just wanted to do a brief preface before we start the actual episode. Here at the Worldview Podcast, we occasionally get lucky. Actually, in the past two episodes, we got quite lucky and got to interview two very smart, quite impressive people in their own rights. Hopefully by now you've already listened to Mr. Musa, and now the second one, Lisanna, who has a PhD and who's very inspirational in her career and what she wants to do with all this knowledge and the expertise that she's accumulated throughout her years. So with that, hope you enjoy it, and stay tuned. Welcome to the Worldview Podcast. My name is Aryan, and today we have yet another special guest, namely Lisanna van Bundere. I hope I didn't torture the pronunciation there, or maybe I did.
It's
a
okay.
Bit. okay, great. So anyway, Lisanna was the main lecturer for leadership and management in the pre-master's course of recently finished. And given that I enjoyed her teaching style as well as the subject itself, I'm quite confident that there's a lot we could, a lot of interesting topics we could discuss today. So welcome, Lisanna, and glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Well, that's the honor should be mine and is. So sort of like a, I guess, warming up question, or just as a means of introduction, so we get to know you a little bit better. Say you are at a party. Surrounded by strangers, obviously post-corona, or hopefully post-corona, let's put it that way. How would you introduce yourself to them?
Wow. Hopefully soon again, because I can't wait to be at a place full of people enjoying themselves and talking to each other and meeting new people. Especially that. I think that's one of the hardest things of COVID, I guess, not meeting a lot of new people. How I would introduce myself, that's a very good question. I should have thought about this question.
It's fine. There are different type of people. I can already imagine, you know, some people like myself, kind of don't, you know, shy away from talking about themselves 24/7. So I don't really have any issues talking about myself. But some other people, you know, more humble, perhaps more social, or more humble people. Maybe they don't want to, or they have more difficulty introduce themselves. So they could be introduced by others. So maybe we could talk about the fact that you've literally won the prize for being a best teacher at UFA. We could talk about your businesses, but I was more interested in how would you define yourself? How would you, you know, like you know, there's a lot to talk about, obviously, about your career, but what interests you to introduce first? Because obviously when you're introducing yourself to a group of strangers, you don't have a lot of time to, you know, delve deep. What parts of your career are, you know, more important to you to introduce?
I think so. Being a teacher is part of my identity. I really love to teach. I really love to transfer knowledge, and I really love to find ways to resonate with an audience. And I think this is maybe also part why I find your question difficult, because in every different situation, I would introduce myself differently, because I try to really adapt to the situation and to the people I'm talking with. So what is our connection? So in your case, if I would meet you and I heard that you're a student, I would introduce myself as a teacher working at the university. Yeah. Whereas when I'm at a network event with large organizations, I will say I'm a behavioral scientist and I work I develop leadership development programs and culture change programs in order to improve organizational effectiveness via strategy alignment. So, and in a setting more with friends and strangers, I would introduce myself as that I founded my own business focusing on development of relational intelligence. So it really depends in which situation I'm in, what I'm focusing on.
That's quite a, I'd say, dare I say, smart answer, just, you know, depending on, so contingent upon, you know, what the situation is or what the situation requires, you introduce yourself differently. Okay, that makes sense. And I believe relational, what was it?
Intelligence.
Relational intelligence, the company that you founded, is the company you founded recently, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm sure you already, based on your, you know, the facial expressions, you already have a lot to say. And I look forward to asking you all of that soon. How do you define success, Lisanna, in general? So what would your version of success look like?
I define success by basically setting your own goals that truly are yours, truly things that you want to accomplish, and achieving those goals.
Yeah. So also the contingency factor also plays a role here. So it depends on what your goals are and basically to achieving them.
Yeah, and of course, what your goals are will always be influenced also by society and your family and life situation and whatnot, but and personality. But by the end of the day, success is for me when I achieve my own goals, then I feel successful.
Yeah. And have you always seen a success this way, or has there been a gradual perceptional shift between, you know, what you used to define success? I mean, for me personally, you know, having a lot of money perhaps would have been the initial definition of success. And as I grew a little bit, perhaps older, I would define success a little bit, you know, in a more meaningful way than now. So has there been a gradual shift, or have you always been... seeing it this way?
Well, I think money has never really been like one of my, it's not really a drive for me. Like I need to be able to do what I really love to do. And for this, I need enough money. And for me, it's traveling is one of my greatest passions. So I need to earn enough money in order to be able to travel. But having like lots of money has never been like for me the definition of success.
You said you like traveling so much. Is it fair to say that the long time ago, or maybe a couple years ago even, you would define success as traveling a lot, like, I don't know, being a digital nomad or something else, and now gradually that perceptional shift occurred, and now you define it a little bit differently?
I never thought like traveling a lot is the definition of success. I did think that it was, I was very proud of it, mm-hmm. and I did brag a bit about it. And
it sounds cool.
Yeah. And I think by now it's much less about sounding cool towards others and what others think, but really doing what I want to do, regardless of like what others think. And as an example, like I worked, I was an assistant professor at the university, and I was in a tenure track, and I was doing quite well actually, and I decided to quit. And nobody understood, because like I was doing well, like why would you give this up? And it was because I realized that if I would continue, I would probably have been successful for the outside world. But because it was not something that was, by the end of the day, really fulfilling enough for me, it would for me not, yeah, it would not be, I would not feel successful.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So yeah, again, your perception versus what would other things. That makes sense. That's glad to hear. Glad you shared that with us. Hey, so you did a very brief you mentioned a couple of things during your introduction. What you're busy with in terms of your portfolio in general. So you said teaching, you mentioned your company, and I'm sure a lot of others. What my question is that how did you get here? So what were your I believe based on your introduction during the course I followed, you mentioned you had previously studied psychology, and then you did a master's at Erasmus for management, right, or something like that. Would you like to elaborate on what or organization? Sorry, I think it was organization. Would you like to elaborate or maybe clarify, correct me on how you got here?
Yeah, sure. So, actually, after high school, I traveled for a few years, and that's been very important because otherwise, I'm not sure whether, or I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't have decided to study psychology. But I realized during traveling that the thing that amazes me most is just humans, human interactions, group dynamics, how do you relate to others, how do you establish and nurture relationships, and these things. Emotions are also fascinating to me. So I decided to study psychology, and not clinical psychology, but social psychology. So social psychology focuses on anything human and not out of the ordinary. So all the normal human psyche and human interaction. So I did my bachelor's, and then I had to decide what I would do for my master's. And I'm quite ambitious, so the most difficult master to do is the research master. And with a research master, they prepare you to become a PhD and basically to become an academic. And I wasn't sure whether that was what I wanted to do because I haven't had much experience conducting research. So I decided that I would contact the professor, the head of the Department of Social Psychology at the University of Amsterdam, and I asked him whether I could be his assistant to conduct some research and to gain some experience.
Oh,
And he said no.
okay.
So I said, okay, but I'll do it for free. It's just for me to gain experience. And he's like, yeah, but no. And I said, okay. And he said, but you can do research and I'll become your assistant.
Wow, that's nice.
That was amazing. And it has taught me so much about paying it forward. And I learned so much from him, not just about conducting research, but also how academia works and also just how the world works. And I love doing research. I love the whole process of seeing a phenomenon and wanting to know more about it and coming up with a model and theory and then testing it and then drawing
So just to
conclusions.
clarify here, this was after your bachelor's, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
How long did this take, this process of conducting research and
So I started with this during my bachelor's. I started to work with him for a few months, and then I decided to do the research master, to apply for the research master. I got in, and the research master is 2 years. And then I got a position, a PhD position at the Erasmus University, so at the Rotterdam School of
Oh,
Management.
okay.
And unfortunately, actually, Joop, which is the professor and who became my mentor, he unexpectedly passed away in my first year of my PhD.
Oh, wow.
And I never had the chance to tell him how that it was such a defining moment for me, or such a defining experience working with him, and that I decided that, well, the one thing I can do is to be inspired by this and to try to be try to yeah to pay it forward. And so when my students ask something of me, I will always say yes if it
Wow.
helps them. So this is why, of course, apart from the fact that I really like to be in your podcast, I also said yes because I think it's important to do.
Thank you.
Anyway, I did my PhD at the Rotterdam School of Management. And during my PhD, I also started to work for this startup because one of the founders of this startup was my PhD advisor. So he asked me to also work for the company. I decided to do so because it gave me the opportunity to collect data, but also to gain a lot of consultancy experience in organizations. So I always combined basically being an academic and working in the field. And then after my PhD, which was on power struggles in organizations, I got the position as an assistant professor at the University of Amsterdam at the business school, where apart from doing research, I had to teach more and more. And I started to realize, well, in academia, the focus is more on doing research. I started to realize how much I love teaching and actually that I love it maybe even more than doing research.
Okay.
And I continued also working for ESRE for one day a week, and then 2 years in.
I'm sorry, for whom? For the company, you mean?
Yeah, for the startup. Yeah. Right. So I always combined it. It was quite intense. And then after 2 years, I decided, okay, I'm doing well. I was doing well. I was on my way in the tenure track. It was all going well. But then I realized if I continue like this, I'll be 40, and then I won't be satisfied.
Yeah.
I need to stop. So I quit and I started traveling again.
Okay.
And then COVID hit.
Uh-oh. How long were you able to travel nonstop before COVID hit?
4.5 months.
Okay. Wow.
Which isn't bad, but no. I was not ready to come back.
No. I remember, I think during your first lecture, there was this photo of you in, I don't know, South Africa, I want to say, or, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
With the elephant.
In a savannah, like, the background is, like, basically, Wild West or just the savannah, and, it was pretty nice. Did you rent a van, or was it...
Partly. So in Tanzania and Zambia, we did it with public transportation, which was quite challenging. And in Namibia and in Botswana, we had a jeep with like the rooftop tent, which was like something I always wanted to do. and in South Africa, I just had a car. Yeah.
Nice. Hey, you mentioned a couple of things I want to ask you about. Regarding the company, what was the name of it again?
My company or the company?
No, the startup.
S-Ray. S-Ray.
Yeah.
Diagnostics.
And there you did consulting?
Yeah, so what we do is...
And gather data. That's what you...
Yeah, so what we do is we measure strategy alignment, so the degree to which all employees are aligned with the corporate strategy. And the idea is, of course, the only way to implement the strategy effectively if you're all aligned with the strategy. Yeah. So we developed a tool to measure this. So this is all, we developed this in a scientific manner. We really work scientifically. This way. One of the founders is a hotshot professor. So that's part of it. We measure the degree of alignment, but we also try to explain alignment by looking at the type of leadership that there is, the type of culture that there is, and we try to determine what organizations need to do in order to improve their alignment. So what kind of leadership is needed in this specific organization to get the people more aligned, what facets of the culture need to change in order to get the people more aligned.
Could I if I were to simplify it, could I explain it as scientific consultancy or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah. And you did also mention about your PhD, the topic of your PhD was power struggles in companies. Could you elaborate on that? Is it like political plays or like political power plays?
Yeah, so it's in organizational teams, because of course you have always power struggles in organizations, right? Because you always have a finite amount of resources that need to be divided. So mainly between different departments or business units, there's always a power struggle about the resources, right? About budgets and stuff. But I focused on organizational teams, and within a team, you don't want to have a power struggle is really detrimental, because it means you're not sharing information anymore. There's a lack of trust. You sabotage each other, and your performance goes down.
How many members did each team have? Is it like a?
It's from 3 until 10, 15 generally.
Oh, okay.
That's what we consider an organizational team. And I investigated when are these power struggles most likely to occur, so you also know how to prevent them. Because
could you give us some spoiler, or should we
read my whole dissertation?
Should we go and read your
dissertation? No, I can give you the main takeaway. So I always explain it like this. So let's say you are on a ship, you're on a cruise ship, and it gets shipwrecked. And luckily you survive, and you are now on the small raft with a few others. And you don't know when you're going to get rescued, if you're going to get rescued. Then you have two options, right? You can either collaborate with these other people and try to divide a little bit of food that you have and try to, you know, seek comfort and support.
Yeah.
Or you may choose for yourself, and you may hide food. You may, you know, throw someone overboard to increase your own chances of survival.
Is it correct to, I'm sure you have a lot to say, and maybe I'm being a little bit silly to intervene here. But is it true that the former choice to, you know, kind of collaborate is usually the smarter choice, and like it hires your chances of survival? Whereas if everybody decided to work for themselves, that's kind of like one of the silliest things you could do.
So it depends on I think the level of analysis as well, because as a team, it will always be better to collaborate, because as a team you will do better. But if you choose for yourself, it depends on if your performance eventually is based on your team performance, it's bad to choose for yourself, because if you harm others, you will also harm yourself, because your performance as a team will go down. But it could in certain situations also be the case that if you are top dog and you win, and you increase your own position in the in the team and in the organization, that it's good for you and not good for the rest.
So, like in usual, yes, but it depends. Sometimes no. Is that
sometimes no, but overall, I would recommend you. Okay. I would not recommend to engage in a power struggle.
Will do. Thanks. Anyway, you were sorry.
Yeah. So what this example shows is like if there is a threat from the outside. So if you are in a team, in an organizational team, and there's a threat, for example, you have a conflict with another team, or there's a lot of uncertainty, there's organizational change, or now in times of COVID that you don't really know where you're going, what's going to happen. So people start to feel threatened and insecure. They have the feeling that they need to protect themselves, and then they can either do this by protecting their own position, so to engage in a power struggle, or by collaborating and try to protect the team. When do they do what? That depends on the mindset in the team, which is oftentimes dependent on the team structure. So if there is a hierarchy in the team, people will have more of this of an individualistic mindset. They will think more, they see themselves less as a cohesive group, but more they think more of themselves and their own position. So then you see that there are more power struggles. Or if there is less interdependence, so if I'm not that dependent on you to do my work, I'm also more likely to engage in power struggles. Whereas if we're very dependent on each other, or if we're very if there's a very egalitarian team structure, you see that people unite rather than divide.
That's interesting. Just out of curiosity, do you know why in a classical old school hierarchical group structure people tend to kind of act a little bit more selfishly? Like yeah, why the reasoning is?
Yeah, because when there are power differences, you also see power becomes salient, and you see what the benefits are of having power, and you want it. You don't want to be at the bottom of the hierarchy. So when there is a ladder to be climbed, most people want to climb it.
And basically, I think if I understood it correctly, people still may. So people in a hierarchy still may collaborate with people above them, but they don't really care about people below them, if I understood it correctly. Because of the power situation, you want to get more power, so you want to make the people above you a little bit happy, or maybe collaborate with them, but you don't really care about the people below you. Is that fair to say?
It depends. They do say that the more power you get, the more you want, and that power corrupts, and that you become more instrumental. So it's not that you care about the people below you, but also in an instrumental way. How can they help you to become more powerful?
Makes
that
sense.
Being said, there are also people with more pro-social mindset that are not completely blinded by power.
Not everybody and they do care. Exactly. Yeah,
but generally you see that there's also I find this there's so much fascinating research on power and also on what power does to your mindset, to your interactions, to your emotions. But people with more power, they also feel more distance towards people with lower power, and people with lower power are very focused on the people with power, and indeed people with power are less focused on the people with not so much power. So
So I guess the gist, or at least one of the conclusions, could be that just make the organizational structure the egalitarian, just make it flat, and just higher interdependency. Don't try to the focus, or rather have power, intensify power in one position, but rather kind of just divided evenly as much as possible.
As much as possible. And I mean, of course, we do need leadership, but give people the feeling that they're all in the same boat. Like going back to the example, if you believe we're all in this together, so really create this team mindset rather than this individualistic mindset. And if there are differences also in terms of expertise, but make sure that everyone feels that they matter. That's by the end of the day. We all need recognition. We all need to feel that we are important, that we contribute, and that we are cared about.
That makes sense. Hey, so given the ease with which you were teaching us during the very brief chance that I had to be your student, and the sense of friendliness, ability, and alacrity that you managed to convey, even through the small screens on our devices, and the fact that you had literally won, as earlier mentioned, the prize for best lecturer of the year. All that together, I was wondering if you have any advice for me on how to become a better public speaker, how to better express myself, or in fact become a better teacher.
So first of all, I think you should really care about your audience, and this seems like a no-brainer, but oftentimes people don't. They care about their own story, and they're so focused on telling their own story that they don't look at whether their story is resonating. So it's so important that when you stand in front of a group, but also just when we are interacting, that you really try to read the other person or to read the group and see, okay, are they still with me? Are they getting it? Am I giving examples that resonate with them, that trigger them, or am I just telling my own story, and is my message not coming across? And
Has I been tone deaf so far, or how would you told me? I mean, obviously, I didn't have a huge audience, but was I tone deaf, or was I more or less a little bit more flexible towards you? I mean, be honest. I know it's fine. Whatever you say, I can. No, at the end of the day, I can just edit you out. So.
No, I'll be joking. No, you're doing well. You're doing
okay,
well.
Like, good, the key is, nice.
It's, yeah. So the key in interaction is, of course, to really listen and not just listen to what people are saying, but also to look at their body language a lot, and and to make people feel comfortable, and to seek for the similarities. People, we like to, like, it's become so much easier. The interaction will smooth when we feel like we are, that we have something in common.
Yeah.
Right. So true. I always try to seek, and this is actually getting back to the start of the conversation, right? So how would you introduce yourself? Yeah. It depends on where I am, because I look for our commonalities, because very that smart. will that is the social glue.
And possibly that's why you appeared so approachable, like, and friendly as well, but so approachable. I was like, oh, this is like, you know, talking to, or listening to, when I was listening to your lectures, I was like, this is like listening to a friend, a very knowledgeable friend who's talking in my with my vocabulary, or you conveyed a very approachable feeling. I think that's one of the facts, that you just try to seek similarities and engage your audience that way.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting that you asked me, okay, can you give me advice? Because this is, I really believe that knowing how to do this, so not just to give a good presentation, but to really know how to effectively connect, interact, and establish like healthy and trusting relationships with diversity of people, people from different backgrounds, different cultures, different hierarchical levels in different settings, that this is the key for career success. And this is something that we don't really teach our students, right?
No. We
don't, I think at the HBO more than at the university, but I was always, I was like astonished that we hardly spent any time on this, and this is actually where why I founded my company, because that focuses really on this, helping students and young professionals to develop their relational intelligence, because that's what it is.
Yeah, that's a great segue to perhaps the last or the penultimate question. I was really wondering about, and that's about your company. So you started very recently. You founded it yourself, or you co-founded it?
I founded it, yeah.
Solely, and so you founded it in July, based on your LinkedIn. Was it July or like in the summer, basically?
Yeah.
And so it's a quite a recent company, and I think you've already mentioned a couple of times that it focuses on relational
intelligence.
Exactly, relational intelligence, which is similar or a little bit relevant to or related to social intelligence. But could you perhaps elaborate on the difference there?
Yeah, so it really focuses on establishing and nurturing relationships. It's all about this. I think relational intelligence is part of social intelligence. Social intelligence is a bit broader concept. What we focus on is really training for students and for young professionals to, how do you navigate relationships in organizations. So if you get in, like, you have to deal with all these different people, different stakeholders, people with different positions, different from different backgrounds, both in terms of culture, but also expertise. Like, how do you deal with these people?
Yeah.
And how do you make it work without losing yourself?
Yeah.
I think this is one of the greatest challenges when you start working, and it's something that that we don't really
not that much, no.
No, we don't really prepare our students for this. We don't really help them to develop this.
No, yes. I mean, you could argue maybe due to the way curriculum works that you have a couple of group activities. They're actually, you know, a little bit challenging students to think in a social or relationally intelligent manner. But obviously, it is still lacking, and a lot could be done, and much better could be done. I was wondering, are your clients educational organizations, or is it more like a B2C? So, like you also talk to students as well.
Right now, it are educational institutions. So we're going to pilot actually at the University of Amsterdam. Nice. And I don't know what will happen later, but like my dream is to really get it as part of the curriculum, because I truly believe that it's necessary, and I really want this for my students, because I noticed while teaching that some are very socially like equipped, like they have a lot of relational intelligence, but many, I was like, wow, and you need to go into the world, and like the way they communicated with me, yes, and with their fellow students, I thought, you're not gonna make it, even though you're so incredibly smart. Yeah. You're so smart, but this will be such a problem and such a turnoff. And organizations, like, you know how competitive it is. There are so many smart students. Like, they will choose for the student that they don't have to coach in this manner, you know? Yeah. So I hope that we can do
100%. I hope that too. And what would be like some of your key if you were let's hope next year added to the part of the curriculum as you're hoping, what would be some of the core features of your course? Is it going to be like a one semester long course, half semester long course? How do you envision it?
So in my dream scenario, I mean, this is not something that you develop overnight. This requires a lot of everyday practice. So it's called experiential learning. So it's not, you don't learn this in the classroom. Mm-hmm. You learn this by doing. So you get a lot of small assignments that let you experiment in your own life with your fellow students, with your colleagues, with your family. And you reflect upon all these exercises, and this will help you to develop.
Could you provide an example of such a small exercise?
Okay,
if you haven't thought of it.
I have, but I'm thinking, so the smallest one, but a very effective one, is ask open questions. Ask open questions in a conversation, or engage in act. So today, one of the exercises could be, okay, so today when you meet your friend, engage in active listening. So that means that instead of interrupting, you're actually really
instead
listening.
Instead of interrupting like me, like case in point right now. Okay, sorry.
Listen to what someone is saying.
Right.
Check whether, summarize what someone has said, and check whether this is indeed what the person meant. Because oftentimes we think we get it. Mm. I think I understand what you said. But oftentimes you said something completely different, or you meant it very differently.
Yeah.
So to actually check like whether the communication is right, and whether, you know, there's not a lot of noise between the sender and the perceiver. So these little things, so this is very little, but one of the most important things is also conflict management. And when you get into a disagreement, rather than it hurting your relationship, it can actually also help to strengthen your relationship. So there will be assignments on this, but these are a bit bigger and a bit more complicated. But
have you read or have you heard of the book How to Win Friends and Influence People?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the title kind of, you know, misguides the audience to, or the reader to think, oh, I have to win people. So I have to win friends. So it's about people who don't have friends. And
yeah.
But no, it's actually quite an interesting book on how to how to become a better, more social, more approachable person. And conflict resolution was one of the main chapters there that, you know, really tries to, I mean, obviously it's theoretical, so you need to, as you mentioned earlier, just practice it in your day-to-day life, experimental that way, make it more experimental. But what the book argued was to kind of try to see it from the other person's point of view and kind of like just stop, you know, I know you're like feeling, you know, hurt or like angry that the other person doesn't agree, but just stop and try to see, like, try to listen, like, why is that person seeing it that way? And then if you could like ask some other questions to why do you feel this way? Or like, what made you feel? And then talk about your feeling. How do I feel? This is how you made me feel, or, you know, that kind of questions. I think it really helped me. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that book really helped me. I think that was quite a nice book. And in a way, I could argue, value proposition. I could say that based on how the world is going, and you know, like more and more we're locked up to our screens, and especially the newer generations, on and on. I think the need for companies and curriculums and any sort of entity that provides better relational intelligence guidance only increases, right? I think this is quite a smart thing to do and be working on. I hope it goes well with the curriculum, with the you know, bring it to university. But even if the university thing doesn't work, I'm pretty sure, you know, like, the need is there and the need is gonna grow. So even like elsewhere, I'm sure you can find the demand for it overall. At least, yeah, that's what I think. Not sure if I could really share my opinions this freely with somebody with masters and who's done so much research, and every time she talks, like a lot of the articles are just being quoted, and I'm just sharing my opinions. But hopefully, it.
No, please share your opinion. Okay. And also, I think what you said about the why, when you are oftentimes when people get angry, or like when you get into a conflict, or like you have different positions. The when you really get to the why of why someone gets angry, or what that position is, and why you don't, you know, why it feels like you can't really reconcile. If you just continue to get to the why, oftentimes it turns out you can reconcile. It's just, the problem is we stop trying to really find out why the person thinks and feels the way that he or she does. And the same with ourselves, like, what is it that I actually want? What's underneath? What's my need? And once you get to that need, oftentimes that need can be fulfilled in different ways. And if you fulfill it in a different way, then suddenly you don't have a conflict with that person anymore. So actually, that was a really good thing you brought in there.
Thank you. Don't you think it's the way you described it right now made me think of system one and system two. So don't you think when you just immediately disagree and you think, oh, I can't, you know, agree anymore with this person, that's kind of your system one, that, you know, just very snap judgments. But if you just, you know, take it slowly, just think a little bit more clearly, maybe just leave the environment, like go for a walk or something, and then come back. And in the meanwhile, just think it over. So system two is, you know, more involved. Maybe it could help. Is that fair to say, or?
Yeah, I guess so. Like the first one with system one, it's of course more emotionally charged, and that's what happens. Like you say something, and I don't like it. I have this emotion, and I get angry most of the time. If someone is getting in our way, we get upset, and we stop thinking of indeed why we really get upset, or we take indeed the shortcut. So I think yeah, could be that it's very system one, and when you get to system two, and you really, like, emotions will always go down. I think people don't realize that if you just wait, get out of the situation, the emotion will go and you start to realize what's underneath the emotion.
Hey, I'm looking at the time. It's already a little bit over, more than a little bit over the time we discussed. I didn't really felt the necessity to take a look at the time, but because you know I was we were just talking about so many interesting topics, but now I did. And sorry if it's a little bit stretching our agreed upon time. I honestly enjoyed it. Could go another round. As long or maybe longer, but I just want to thank you for all the time you provided. There's one more question. I'm not sure if there is time we could go through, but even if we can't, based on your Facebook question, that's perfect. Hey, so as a I see I also wrote what's your teaching style, but you've already covered that based on the answer you gave previously. So the last question would be, how would you advise me, or for that matter anybody else who's listening to this interview, to achieve success the way you see it? This is a little bit comes with a little bit of caveat, because usually, like in the beginning, my guests say, okay, success for me is, for instance, giving to others, or success for me is this, like this concrete thing. And then I'm asking you, so how do we achieve that? But based on, you know, the definition you gave, it's contingent, right? So it depends how. But I mean, if you could, it'd be nice to hear your advice.
Yeah, I mean, I would say know what you truly find important. Know what you want to achieve, like really, and this is, you know this, of course, from the course as well. So set your own goals and make them public, have a way to, like it, they should be obtainable, and if they are like really big, then make sub goals that you can achieve. Otherwise, you get demotivated. And work towards those goals and be honest to yourself that at some point it might be that goal is not the goal that you want to achieve anymore. And that's okay too. It doesn't mean that you failed. Like, I actually think that shows that you matured and then it's totally okay to say, okay, I don't want this goal anymore. I have now a new goal. So yeah, I think that's what I would say. So know what you really want, and
So based on what I heard, just to be a little bit, like, take it seriously, be honest to yourself, set goals, and also be flexible about them. So don't just stick to this, even though, you know, you may feel differently than what you felt I don't know, 2 years ago when you set this goal. But be flexible, and if this one doesn't work out, I'm sure something else will, or maybe you'll change your goal entirely. Okay, that's quite smart, I'd say. Hey, is there anything else you would like to discuss or mention while we're recording?
I think we covered most of it. The only thing, and I already mentioned it a bit, but for me it's not the definition of success, but it is it really does add to your happiness, this whole pay it forward. And you know, so many people have given me opportunities and have shown their trust and given me their trust, and that has been so rewarding and important to me. And I try to do the same to my students and people I work with. Give people opportunity to shine. Don't feel threatened. Get inspired by it. Get proud. And that's, for me, that really makes me happy. So
that's a pretty nice way to end the podcast. I would once again like to thank you for the opportunity you gave me to hopefully shine. And I'll make sure to if anybody asks and I can help also to give it forward. Because funny enough, this is this seems to be a pre-recurring pattern, but this is also what the previous guest talked about, about his success and how to become successful, actually, just to, you know, just to do random acts of kindness without any any plans to, you know, kind of get back or anything, just do something. And very interesting. Okay, I very enjoyed our conversation. Hopefully, you know, I don't have any expectations or plans, but hopefully we can do it in the future too. I very interesting person, very interesting stories. Also, what you're doing with your company, I honestly want to hear more about it. But for now, I think this has been it. Thanks. Thanks a lot again.
Thank you so much, Arian. I wish you all the best. And I really, I really love that you have your own podcast. That's amazing.
Oh, I'm sure you could start one too, and possibly get all the get all of my listeners in the first day or first day. Nothing.
Oh, maybe, maybe.
Yeah.
Thank
hey,
you.
I enjoyed it, and hopefully, maybe even I can. I'll see you next next year.
Yeah.
Doing my, doing my master's.
Your master's.
All right,
yeah.
Exciting. So this has been it. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If this is the case, or if there is a slight possibility for this to become a case, please share it with someone, with your loved ones, or a random person on the street. Obviously, for us to grow this, this is the, you know, only media through which we could grow. Otherwise, survival of the fittest. So if this isn't an interesting podcast and it doesn't get shared, then bye-bye, I guess, soon. But until then, we'll see you next week.